We present the news quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the news quiz. We start with a cutting from the Selby District Council website, read by Zeb Soans.
The winner of a competition to name the new leisure centre in Selby is Steve Wadsworth. He's won a 3 years membership to Wigan Leisure and Culture Trust. He chose the name Selby Leisure Centre.
Our thanks to Stephen Davenport for sending that in. Now, let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Andy Hamilton and Mark Steele. And opposite them on my left, stand-up comedian Angela Barnes and Jeremy Hardy. Andy, which traders couldn't give a 4X for the rules?
Yeah, this is the currency traders who were basically rigging the rates to line their own pockets. £2.7 billion worth is the fine. And it made for depressing reading their emails to each other, because it was full of sort of alpha male drivel. They gave each other names like the players and the A team and the Three Musketeers. They sounded like contestants from The Apprentice. They sounded like contestants who get fired in week one of The Apprentice. But moronic as they were, it still took a few years to catch them. So it seems like the system was more stupid than they were. Anyway, there was a sort of shockwave of outrage. And the city minister said an interesting thing. She said, corruption doesn't cover it. I thought, actually, corruption's quite a good word for it. I don't think we really need another word. There were lots of other words being bandied around: scandalous, disgusting. The one word I didn't hear mentioned was prison. Because it tends not to be mentioned. Although, encouragingly, these individuals are going to be investigated by the Serious Fraud Office, which is good, because up till now, I think these offences have only been investigated by the Trivial Fraud Office.
Yeah, I think the gist of what Andy was saying, really succinctly, is that bankers are still a lying, thieving bunch of crooked pigs who should all be put in jail. And it's just... It shows you how changed, because I'm sort of 30 years ago, if you said to someone, yeah, they're all thieves, they should be sacked, the bankers, people would go, oh, maybe. But now if you say bankers should be sacked, people go, what, sacked? Never mind sacked, they should have their skin stripped off and marmalade put on their nerve endings and then covered in wasps, never mind sacked. They should be strapped to a pig and rolled into an armed jihadist warrior camp. I'll give you sacked.
Doesn't
make any difference,
today,
they carry on, don't they?
London bankers' reputation in tatters. It's like, what, today?
It starts a useful precedent. If we can find the bankers for that, you know, quite minor bit of currency fiddling stuff, then surely we can find them for bringing the country's banking system to its knees. And just their general sort of idiocy.
That is what happened. That's happened. I went in to pay me tax, and the bloke
said... All right,
said,
don't bang on about it. Okay. Just because you're the only comedian who pays his tax.
What a fool I was! And he said, well, where did the money come from for this? I said, what? He said, well, where did it come from? I said, what's that got to do with it? Well, the money, now I'm paying a tax on it. He said, well, have you got proof of where it come from? I said, you can't. Why is this? And he said, for terrorism, because it might be from terrorism that you got the money. I said, oh, yeah, because there's a logic to that. I've made all this money from running guns to ISIS, and then I thought, well, if I get caught for that, I'll be in enough trouble as it is. So I'll be wanting to pay me national insurance on that, won't I?
It's always good if you are a terrorist to put some away for the future, because, you know, every terrorist reaches a point when it's time to hang up their gun and maybe think about going on a cruise.
Yeah. The modern one that I love is my wife is trying to book a Christmas holiday and the computer decided that that was an irregular pattern. I love the idea that the computer sits there and thinks, oh, that's not like Andy and Libby to go away at Christmas. Clearly, someone has stolen their credit card and decided to take a bit of a break. I mean, it's just bizarre.
This is what they do now, the banks, isn't it? They'll ring you when you're at home. They ring you and then they say to you, can you answer some security questions?
Yeah.
Well, they've rung you! Check who you're bloody ringing! ringing your pigs before you ring. You should be asking them security questions. I don't know who you are. Well, we're the bank. I don't know that, do I? Here's some security questions. Who the bloody hell are you? That's the first one. And then, and they say things. And then they'll go, just a simple question. All right, then, well, we won't process any of your payments and then you'll starve. Smart. So they go, all right, it's just simple security questions just to check that you are indeed the valid account holder. In 1998, you bought something. How soft was it?
I got asked for my birthday, and I said, 3rd of May, 1958. And the woman said, that's not what I've got here. Six banks face record fines of £2.6 billion from US and UK regulators after boastful traders tried to manipulate the foreign exchange markets known as Forex. The Financial Conduct Authority, who keep an eye on all fiscal matters, said the failings at these banks undermine confidence in the UK financial system and put its integrity at risk. They also warned that if Woolworths carries on the way it's going, one day it might have to close some shops. Add 2 points to Andy. Mark, who's labouring to keep a calm Ed under fire?
Well, I suspect that this is to do with the travails of Ed Miliband, the leader of the Labour Party, who was... And I almost feel... I know you feel sorry for him now, because I think he's been so hopeless, I can't even get round to disliking him, to be honest. I've said it before, he's like a sort of sellotape salesman that you meet at a service station and... After a few minutes, go, really, you cover the whole of Dorset? And but I feel sorry for him. And even when he made his speech, which was his big fight-back speech, and he started it by saying, well, they say whatever doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And I thought, well, I don't know if that's true or not, but that Phyllis from the Launderette would say that, wouldn't she? I mean, can't you do better than that? If he's like this party political broadcast, his next one, he'll look into the camera and he'll say, well, the hours that you sleep before midnight do you as much good as each hour you have after midnight. And make sure you have plenty of beetroot because it keeps you regular. That's just a... Just a saying, just do something. I mean, if the thing is even him, I think all the people around the Mandelsons and various people like this, they've all decided that the thing to do, renationalising the railways, anything like that, that's popular, and we don't want to ruin our electoral prospects by saying things that might be popular. So you're not allowed to say anything like that and sit there, and really, they might as well just go to South America and come back in June and see how they got on.
But it's also his clothing. It's also Ed's clothing. How is it that he looks like he's... Whatever suit he's got on, it appears to be school uniform made by Lady Bird. It's the most...
I feel... So the thing about Miliband is he just doesn't... He misses a trick all the time. The bacon sandwich thing, right? Struggling to eat a bacon sandwich. If you're Jewish, that's a flipping gift, isn't it? Obviously. What's the first thing you say? Oi! My mistake. The souls of my ancestors tugging it from my mouth. And he just... No, you're not thinking what...
He should be able to do it. Because, I mean, the Liberal Democrats... Because loads of people voted Liberal Democrat last time under the sort of clearly the mistaken belief that they were going to be a bit more radical than the Liberal. But they're completely stuffed now, aren't they? But when they had their conference, for example... Really, Nick Clegg might as well have just got up at the beginning and said, well, this is all a bit of pointless. You can all bring in games. Nothing. Who's going to believe a single thing they said? Now, they might as well just make things up for their next manifesto. We're going to give every pensioner a pterodactyl. They might as well say, we're going to abolish gravity. Because no one's going to believe them. You're just lying. So just have a laugh with it, Nick.
In polls, isn't Nick Clegg still more popular than Ed Miliband?
He is Ed Miliband.
Yeah. And in the last month, like, Ed Miliband's gone from being like 51% of Labour voters thinking he can be Prime Minister right down to 30-something in a month. Like, what have you done? Rolf Harris hasn't gone down that far.
If I were Ed Miliband... Oh, there's a thought to give you a fright. If I were Ed Miliband, I would make a speech saying, I have serious doubts about my ability to lead this country. And then you think, well, now I trust your judgment. I think that's...
I mean, there was this coup that supposedly was taking shape and then was abandoned, but what the Labour insiders are saying is that they've put it to Ed that during the election campaign itself... he could maybe work from home.
It's been a tough couple of weeks for Ed Miliband as doubts about his leadership of the Labour Party have been raised. Suggestions that he might be ousted were refuted by former Home Secretary Alan Johnson and by one Labour MP who said there is no organised coup or plot because there are no alternative candidates, a phrase Ed has had emblazoned on a motivational poster in his office. Despite publicly supporting Miliband, Tony Blair has reportedly been telling friends that the Conservatives will win the next general election. It's uncertain which of his friends leaked this to the press, but the smart money is on Lucifer. 2 points to Mark. Jeremy, who was all dressed up for a vote that wasn't warranted?
Cameron was at that do you go to in the City of London where you have to wear a white tie and tails and have a cane and have a little routine that you've worked out to do on the stairs as you arrive. And someone whispered in his ear, and Cameron got up, and he rushed back to the Commons because he had to vote, because it centres around the European arrest warrant. Now, this is opposed by a handful of Labour Libertarian MPs and a few Tory Eurosceptics who basically don't like it because it's European and they think it was developed by absinthe-crazed existentialists in a CD Montmartre bistro. So the government basically tried to push it through the Commons as part of a package of opting back in to 35 bits of European law, which we opted out of at Lisbon, without having the debate it had promised on the European arrest warrant. And John Bercow kicked off because he's bored, because he's got a weird wife and he's lonely at home. And Yvette Cooper stepped in a completely self-serving way, because Labour actually supports the blooming thing, and they just want to get some advantage. So to embarrass it, they said, this cannot be discussed without a separate debate, and there was a motion, and this is why Cameron had to rush back for this vote. And Yvette Cooper, in her rhetorical flourish, said, the Home Secretary is doing her Paul Daniels act. And I thought, you've got your finger on the pulse of popular culture, haven't you? Hey, a 1980s TV reference, eh? You couldn't have gone Derren Brown, could you?
I have to say, it was a sort of sweet mental image. You don't think of Cameron sprinting through Westminster in white tie and tails. I was just thinking, you chuck in a bunch of roses and, I don't know, Theresa May is about to get on a plane. You've got a Richard Curtis movie.
I bet he loved it, turning back up in the chamber in, oh, what, this old thing?
Yeah, he said he was forced to return to the Commons dressed in white tie and tails. Forced. I bet it was the most comfortable he's ever felt.
They all started accusing each other, didn't they, of bringing Parliament into disrepute. And you thought, is that still a concept?
I have to say, who would have thought there could be such a shamble amongst the ranks of the Conservatives with a strong, competent chief whip like... Oh, no, it's Michael Gove, isn't it? Oh. There was confusion in the Commons on Monday when MPs who thought they would be voting on the reinstation of the European arrest warrant found they were actually voting on 11 other European justice measures instead. According to The Times, the Home Secretary, Theresa May, filibustered for half an hour while David Cameron dashed from a formal dinner to the Commons where he was finally able to input the secret code that turns her off. The next time the House of Commons wants to vote on something urgently, you really want David Cameron to be in the middle of a charity fun run dressed as SpongeBob SquarePants. That's... At the end of round one, the scores are Andy and Mark have got 4 points, but so too have Angela and Jeremy. We start round two with a cutting from The Guardian about legislation on binge drinking in France.
The draft bill hopes to make binge drinking illegal, with sentences of up to a year behind bars.
And our thanks to Pauline Guy for sending us that. Andy, have a listen to this.
Would you like to swing on a star? Carry moonbeams home in a jar? And be better off than you are? Or would you rather be a mule?
Andy, whose technological achievement is out of this world?
Well, this is a joyous, wonderful story. It's absolutely fantastic. I loved watching the scientists celebrate the success of landing on a comet. And as I was watching those celebrations, I thought, what an amazing, paradoxical species we are, because we can build a rocket that can chase a comet, you know, into the furthest reaches of our solar system. You know, it can go for 10 years. And on that rocket, we can make a landing craft that can descend onto the comet, which is travelling at 34,000 miles an hour. And then we can make the technologies that enable it to scan the surface of the comet. And we can make the telemetry that can beam that data back across the billions of miles back to planet Earth. We can make all this, and we can make Made in Chelsea. Isn't that astonishing? They're absolutely astonishing.
I like the way they describe it. They describe it as trying to land on a speeding bullet. And I absolutely know it. It's exactly the same as, you know, that thing of trying to open the door for the postman in the millisecond that you have between him knocking and him leaving the sorry you were out card.
It bounced. What I love was the use of the word bounced, because it took 7 hours to bounce because there is virtually zero gravity. So it didn't really bounce. It whoa. I think it went half a kilometre up in the air and then settled again. But and now they're getting, I think, because it's looking for something called left-handed amino acids. And left-handed amino acids are just like right-handed amino acids, except they struggle to open things.
Scissors are not good with scissors.
Yeah, that's how it works.
They changed their story, though, because, first of all, they said, I heard them distinctly say it was the size of a fridge, and then within a few hours, they were saying it was the size of a washing machine. They were obviously thinking, well, comet, white goods.
I was just thinking, they've landed this thing the size of a fridge on this desolate landscape. It's going to look like my mum's garden.
Rubber duck shape, doesn't it?
That was extraordinary. So the scientists said they assumed the comet would be potato-shaped, but it's actually rubber duck-shaped. I thought, oh, enough with the scientific jargon, boys.
But you see, I was hearing someone on the radio say today, talking about the first pictures coming back and things like that, and saying, well, it doesn't really look very exciting, does it? And I thought, oh, no, isn't that? But they've gone to all that trouble. It reminded me, I was in Leeds, and I found out, apparently, the first moving film ever was shot in Leeds. It's a bus going over a bridge. It's about 5 seconds. And you can see it on YouTube. And I had a look at it, and I thought, how exciting. That's the first, 1888, first bit of film. Because it's on YouTube, underneath there's all the comments, and 14 people have disliked it. Isn't that pathetic? No, boring. And someone, I'll see if I can get the exact words of this right. Someone wrote underneath it, in the comments, it makes you think, if there'd been film earlier than this, we'd be able to see things even older than that.
The European Space Agency has successfully landed a probe, the Philae lander, onto the surface of a comet orbiting between Jupiter and Mars after a 10-year voyage. There was an anxious 7-hour wait before the probe signalled to its mothership that it had arrived safely, followed by a 2-hour rant from the mothership about how worried it had been. 2 points to Andy. Mark, who has been officially cleared of foul play but is accused of a summary judgment.
Oh, this is the good people of FIFA. They put the bankers in the shade, these people. Like, it's one of those things where you think, who needs an investigation? They have given the World Cup, an event involving football, a game that involves a lot of running around, to the hottest country in the world, and where the commentators, if the World Cup does end up taking place, they're in the summer in Qatar, as it's meant to, the commentators will just be going, and the Italian team seems to have melted. And they've given the World Cup to these people who, just by coincidence, apart from being the hottest country in the world, also seems to have the richest people in the world. And it's just, no, they genuinely thought this was a good idea to have the World Cup there, where even if you manage to sit and watch the thing in their version of the shade, you deserve a gold medal. And it's not corrupt. And this is for people who like sport like myself, this is terrible, because the World Cup's a brilliant thing. And then you think, oh, it's FIFA just ruining it. It's like if you go to a really nice barbecue and Robert Mugabe was serving the sausages. You think, just spoils it all. Like, it's so corrupt. You know, that FIFA is so corrupt that Coca-Cola have said they are considering withdrawing sponsorship. Coca-Cola are going, that's too capitalist.
But this was their ethics committee.
Yeah. Well, it's a 42-page report that they've gone, yes, it clears us. And then apparently the bloke who wrote it has said, hang on, I haven't cleared you at all. Yes, you have. Off you go. Go and form another investigation thing somewhere.
It's 52 degrees, isn't it? So,
right. Well, I think so that's what they've got to play in.
What they'll have to do is they'll just have to be practical about it, and it'll have to be 5 minutes each way. And they'll just have to give each player a brolly. That's the only way that they'll survive, is playing with sunshades, which means that players whose game relies on heading, they're going to be at a disadvantage.
But those of us who don't like football would think that would be rather fine, 5 minutes each way. Then we can all watch The Sound of Music.
But England is just as... England was trying to woo Jack Warner. They said, oh, we'll put Dixon of Dock Green back on. You can... It'll be great. You can have a gun this time. And they were trying to woo him. They sent Bex out there. You can do anything you like. Give us the World Cup and you can see me in me pants. Prince William went over and said, hi, I love football. It's such a great game, isn't it? You know, what I don't understand is why you just don't pick up the ball and run with it. Something to do with state schools, I suppose. Weird.
When England was bidding for it, so hopelessly, and I remember that there was Prince William, Beckham and Rooney, I think, all sort of sat together as the sort of icons. And someone, I can't remember who it was, said that that's the most clear-cut example they've ever seen of shag, marry, avoid.
Qatar has been cleared to host the 2022 World Cup after FIFA's ethics committee ruled any breaches of the rules were only of very limited scope and closed its investigation into the bidding process. Only the 42-page summary of the 430-page investigation was published by FIFA, and the writer of the report, former New York District Attorney Michael Garcia, is now going to appeal their decision. Suspicions were first raised by a whistleblower in the Qatari bid. Once he blew his whistle, everyone in FIFA rolled around on the ground holding their leg. 2 points to Mark. Andy, where didn't the Olympics ring the changes?
It was Newham. Newham, according to some research, was the least active place in the country. No surprise. Newham is a very poor borough, one of the poorest, I think. And it was part of a discussion about the sort of non-legacy of the Olympics. I always thought...
Well, the important thing here, just to remind everybody, is that Newham is where the...
Is where the Olympic complex is, yeah. There was a discussion about the sort of the fact that the legacy hadn't arrived. I always thought that the whole Olympic legacy thing was predicated around a misunderstanding of how we engage with sport, because they thought that we'd all be inspired. And it's true, you know... When you watch Mo Farah winning the 5,000 metres, I mean, you were inspired, but the inspiration came in three consecutive thoughts. One, isn't Mo Farah fantastic? What a brilliant run that was. Two, wouldn't it be great if you could run as fast as Mo Farah? That must be a brilliant feeling. Three, where are the biscuits? You know, that's fundamental. We don't watch this stuff. And if they genuinely wanted to inspire young sportsmen and women to become sportsmen, then they should have kept the sports field so they could sport in. So it was always doomed to fail, I think.
Shouldn't show people being good. That's the worst thing, isn't it? Because you just say, oh, no, what's the use in this? I'll never be anything like that. What they should just show is people like a load of clumsy old asthmatics in doing a sack race. And then people think, well, I could do better than that. And that's much more of an incentive, isn't it?
And you know what? It never was about the health of the nation, because if you look at what happened with the funding, like the basketball team were deemed to have underperformed. So their funding was taken away.
Yeah.
Whereas other sports like show jumping did well, so their funding's increased. I don't know what street kids are supposed to do now. Do show jumping with pit bulls. I don't know.
I can't stand all the moralising. I mean, people who think you're a good person. Oh, and you get it on Twitter. Oh, please retweet. I'm running 4.5 yards for IBS Awareness Day. And you think, well, bully for you. Why don't you just give some money and stop showing off, you arse?
I did a sponsored swim. I did one recently. I just learnt to swim this year.
Oh,
yeah.
Right.
I did this 1,500 metre swim, and one of the people that was there to sort of cheer us on, it was for Sport Relief, was Duncan Goodhue. Oh. And when I did, because I'd only just learnt to swim, I was the slowest person in the pool. So the last eight lengths, I had the whole pool to myself, and everyone was cheering me on. It was amazing. And then Duncan Goodhue jumped in and swam my last length with me.
Oh.
I had no idea. First thing I knew about it, I looked behind me, I thought one of my tits had fallen out my swimming costume.
Newham, an East London borough which hosted the Olympics, is the most physically inactive place in England, with 40% of residents not exercising at all. Newham Council leapt to defend itself, and in doing so, doubled physical activity in the borough for the month. England is facing an inactivity crisis, with 29% of people across the country doing less than 30 minutes of exercise a week. Inactivity is the fourth largest cause of disease and disability, and we really should do something about it, but blech. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting they would like to share?
This one is part of the Wolverhampton and Express and Star, I think it's called. And the story said, survey shows Wolverhampton is second best place to live in Britain. And then in the comments underneath on the website, the first one says, what colour crayon was this survey written in?
Anybody else?
Yeah, I've got one for it. Sent in by David Wichard. It's a photograph of the back of a Cardiff bus. And it's a picture of a man standing there, and it says, my Cardiff. And it's a quote from the man. He says, you meet really interesting people on Cardiff buses. It makes travelling by bus a great choice. That's how I met my late wife. How sinister is that?
Presumably he must have been late as well if he met her.
This is from James Nason in Basildon, and he sent a picture. It's on one of those sort of electricity junction box things, and there's a little sign on it, and it says, opening this box will result in death by electrocution and a £20 fine.
Let's take a look at the final score. Andy and Mark have got 12 points, but this week's winners are Angela and Jeremy with 13. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from the Age newspaper in Australia, sent to us by Matt O'Rourke.
The Melbourne General Cemetery is set to become an attraction under plans to make it a tourism hub. Cemetery management is looking at proposals including jazz sessions, family picnics, weddings, and just about anything to liven the place up.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Andy Hamilton, Mark Steele, Angela Barnes and Jeremy Hardy. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news was read by me, Zeb Soames. The chair script was written by Lucy Clark, John Reed Roberts and Andy Walton, with additional material by Mark Jones and Gabby Hutchinson-Crouch. The producer was Sam Michelle.